You're listening to the Stone Tapes on Siren 107.3 FM with Sam Stone and friends.
And that was the amazing Kate Bush with Hammer Horror. And I'm sure throughout the evening you will see that that was very relevant. This is the Stone Tapes. I'm Sam Stone and you're listening to Siren FM. And I'd first like to introduce you to the people I have with me today. I have on my left Patricia H. Ash, editor of Gearheart Steampunk magazine, who is going to be a regular reviewer on the show. Hello.
Hello.
I have never done radio. I have no idea what I'm doing.
I'm sure you're going to have a great time. And I think you'll be brilliant at it, Patricia. We also have our producer, Alex Livchik. I still said it wrong.
Livchik, Sam. Livchik. That's okay.
I knew I'd end up doing that. And co-producer, David J. Howe.
Hello, everybody. Hello. Hello.
And with us in the studio also, our very, very special guest today, Mr. Fraser Hines.
I've never done radio before, so I'm very frightened. He says with tongue in cheek.
You look it, you're trembling in your seat, I can tell. Wonderful to have you all here. We're going to be chatting to Fraser very shortly, finding out what he's been up to. And we're going to have a review from Patricia later on. And, of course, we've got some phone-in guests as well, and I'll introduce those as we go along. And what made the Hammer Horror song most relevant at all to our evening is the fact that we are also going to be looking at reviewing a film, a Hammer Horror film later on, which is called Twins of Evil. I think quite a few people out there may know that one.
Yes, I know. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So your house.
Yes, you did.
About a month ago, yeah.
Fantastic.
So, guys, what do you think of the song Hammer Horror? Any reactions to that one?
Oh, I love that song. I've always loved Hammer Horror. I think it's one of Kate Bush's greatest tracks, and of course the video that goes with it is awesome too. So it just sort of sums up everything that we love about Hammer films and the tremendous sort of cachet of love that they have even today after all these years.
That's the first time I've ever heard Kate Bush Hammer Horror. I've heard the high one and babushka babushka and all the special the plates. I've never heard that one, but it was the first time ever for me.
And so on a first hearing, what was your reaction?
Lovely, great. Now I recognised it straight away, obviously, with Kate Bush, but I didn't realise it was Hammer Horror. Lovely, great song.
And Patricia, is that your kind of music?
I've never heard it either, so.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to go home and I'm going to Google the video and watch it.
Oh, you should see it. It's a great one. Really good.
Like fun.
Where are you from, Patricia, with your accent?
Oh, well, I'm from Texas, but I've moved around a lot, and now I'm here in the UK. So
she flew in today specifically for this show.
I thought she was phoning in live from Texas.
Right, so next part of our show. Patricia, I'm going to put you on the spot. I want you to tell us a little bit about yourself before you go ahead and read your review.
Tell us a little bit about you. In the park and...
GSOH.
But you're an editor. You're an editor.
Yes, I'm the editor of Gearhart's Steampunk Glamour Review, which you can, shameless plug time, you can find this on gearhartsmag.com. I've got a blog on there where I review steampunk things, such as novels, like this one that I'm going to do right now, and movies sometimes, TV shows, web comics, blogs, other blogs. A blog reviewing blogs. That is weird, but that's what I do.
That sounds great. And you have, what book have you decided to review for us this time?
Today I have reviewed The Daring Do Club and The Empire of the Dead by David Wake. It's a really good steampunk zombie adventure.
Well, those two things together already make it sound wonderful, steampunk and zombies.
Yeah,
I'm up for that. Yep. So, tell us all about it.
Well, it's got everything that I love about steampunk in it. It's got mad science, there are zeppelins, there are some strong female protagonists. There's three of them. They're sisters. They're the Daring Do Club. Their family's got this bad habit of getting into adventures. They're not supposed to, but they do. The parents spend the whole book being lost in the Amazon. They spend the second book lost in the Amazon, too. We have not met the parents yet in this series. But this is all about the girls, Ernestine and Georgina and Charlotte. So when the book starts, they've been exiled to a school in Switzerland because there were some adventures. Charlotte got in trouble with some cadets from a military school. And yes, it was just more seemly if they were out of the country. So they don't stay at the school for very long, which is good because the school gets attacked by somebody who's commanding an army of zombies, and everybody dies.
Everybody dies. That's good already.
Except for the girls, for various reasons. They're going on those adventures that they're not supposed to be going on. Ernestine is kidnapped by a group of ruffians that turns out to be headed by a crown prince of an Austro-Hungarian... I don't know if this kingdom actually exists that he's the crown prince of... But he's the crown prince of something. And then he later proposes to her. It's rather improper. Georgina escapes from the undead soldiers and lands in a river and then lands right in the arms of true love. It's really sweet. And then Charlotte stows away on a zeppelin because she just wanted to take a closer look at the zeppelin. She didn't mean to stow away on it. And then she impersonates
a princess.
That's
how these things happen.
She impersonates... I'm going to speak words now. She impersonates a princess because it seemed like a good idea at the time. It wasn't. So the book is told in chapters that alternate viewpoints between the sisters, and David Wake is really good at keeping those very distinct. It's impossible to confuse Ernestine's chapters with Charlotte's. They're very unique. Each sister has their own opinions and goals, and most of these conflict with each other. Really entertaining to watch. Read. David Wake is really good at keeping the reader straight about who's who. Empire of the Dead features a literal cast of thousands. Most of them are zombies, but there are still a lot of characters who have the ability to speak and, you know, have names, and you're like, okay, who was that again? But you don't go, okay, who was that again in this book? Because...
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Hard to do.
Yeah. And the sisters keep splitting off and going on their different adventure things. And then meeting back up, and it's really hard to keep track of. It's really hard to keep track of a story like that, but David Wake is very good at it. So props to David Wake, the author of The Daring Do Club and The Empire of the Dead. So let's see what else. My favorite Daring Do sister is Ernestine, because she's the oldest, and she's supposed to keep her sisters out of trouble. There are two books now. Working on three books about how that doesn't actually happen.
Wow.
I'm an older sister myself, and it's tough. It's hard to be in charge. So I really feel a connection to Ernestine. So not everything's tea cakes and castles. There's a lot of horror in this, funnily enough. Yeah.
Well, with zombies?
Yeah, they're wacky adventures, because it starts off, oh, this is going to be a book with wacky adventures in it. Oh, now people are dying. These wacky adventures have really dire consequences, and it's kind of terrifying a little bit. I laughed out loud. I cried messy, messy tears. There's a character death in this book that's just absolutely brilliant. It will break your heart completely. and stomp on it, and then you're going to go, wow, this is an awesome book.
Just to conclude, did you give it a rating, or don't you like to rate?
Yes, I rate everything that I review on my blog at gearheartsmag.com, and I gave it 4 gears out of 5.
That's very good. A good review.
Good. You had a good time with it.
Oh, it was great. Great adventure. Awesome zombies. Really good steampunk.
And what's it called again?
It's called The Daring Do Club and The Empire of the Dead.
Right.
Thank you.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Patricia. And Mr. Fraser Hines.
Yes.
You're here.
I'm here, yes.
In the studio.
Yes. A break.
Not in the TARDIS.
Not in the TARDIS, no. And not on the stage of the latest Agatha Christie that's touring England at the moment called And Then There Were None.
Ah, and where should you be next week?
Next week, Richmond. We opened on Tuesday because we've got Bank Holiday Monday off. We've just had 4 weeks off. We've been up and down the countryside for about 15 weeks. We had 4 weeks off, and now we go to Richmond, Gravesend. Needs one of your reviews on Gravesend.
That sounds like a brilliant title.
It does, doesn't it?
Gravesend.
Yes.
Gravesend, definitely.
Never been a book called Gravesend. And then we go to... we go Richmond, Gravesend, Crawley, Rhyl, Cardiff, Harrogate, Leeds, Bury St Edmunds. I come to Bury St Edmunds.
There's a lot of places.
A lot of places, yes, up and down the country.
They need to go and look for that on the website.
Yes, you can website it, you can Google it, yes, And Then There Were None. With Paul Nicholas, we've got Paul Nicholas, Verity Rushworth from Emmerdale, we've got Mark Curry from Blue Peter, we've got Susan Penn Halligan from Bouquet of Barbed Wire, Colin Buchanan from D.L. and Pascoe. We've got all the exes are covered. All the exes are covered. Yep.
Now, I know you very well, and I know that probably a lot of listeners already know a lot about you and the fact that you were in Doctor Who for a long time. Still the longest running.
And I don't think anybody will beat that, because I'm still the longest running companion. And nowadays, they seem to do like 2.5 years and then fly off to Hollywood to do a movie or TV series. So I think I'll still remain. In fact, about 4 years ago, David, on my right, gave me the Guinness Book of Records for Christmas. And I thought, oh, that's right, you know, Guinness Book of Records. He said, look at page 172 or whatever. And I went, oh, yeah. Oh, Fraser Hines, longest running companion. And it was only about 10 days later, I thought, I'm in the Guinness Book of Records. Not everybody can be. It took me about 10 days to realise I was in the Guinness
Book of Records. That's very cool. A lot of people try very hard to get into
I know. You've got to swallow 1,000 raw eggs or something, you know.
But
jump off a... State Building.
I think there's a very interesting addition to Doctor Who recently, and you've taken part in a new show, a new historical series that I don't know whether a lot of people in England have heard about yet, but it is available.
Oh yes, Outlander,
as I know, online on
Amazon. That's right, Outlander.
Outlander. And could you tell us how the story of Outlander actually formed? Because I know you were actually.
Yeah, well, what happened was Diana Gabaldon, the authoress, when she was about 29, 30, she was watching a PBS program in America, and she saw this young, handsome lad in a kilt in the War Games, Jamie McCrimmon, and liked the idea of the kilt, liked the legs, and thought, I want to write something about a boy in a kilt. I'm going to call him Jamie. She couldn't call him Jamie McCrimmon, that was BBC copyright, and then she called him Jamie Fraser. I thought she named him Jamie Fraser after me, but apparently the story goes... She couldn't see the cast list at the end, but she just picked the name Fraser. And she said it as this woman, she goes back from 1946 to 1746, falls into a fairy ring and meets another character called Jamie. And she sent me a book, actually, when I was in Emmerdale Farm. She sent me this book, Diana Gabaldon, I've written this about you, and I read it. I tried to get Yorkshire TV to make it, with me playing Jamie at the time, because it was 30 years ago, and they said no. And lo and behold, it became a TV series. And I met her for Radio 4 in Edinburgh at a book signing. She was doing this book signing, and I stood at the end of the queue with my sound man. And as she got to the end of the queue, I just said, would you put that to the original Jamie? So she went, to the original, oh, my God, it's you, how are you? And that was it. So I met Diana Gabaldon. And she was actually on the set when I shot my scene, and I had this picture taken with Sam Heughan, who's fantastic as Jamie.
Oh,
and
yes,
myself.
I know who Sam Heughan is. Yeah, I've seen some episodes of Outlander.
I mean, if you haven't seen Outlander, great cast. I mean, Tobias Menzies, Katrina Balfe, three great stars.
It is,
fantastic,
really good.
Fantastic show.
Really good.
It's on Amazon Prime at the moment, but hopefully it'll British, although it's a bit raunchy. I don't know whether a British TV series would take it, like BBC One or BBC Two, I don't know. They
might end up staying online. I mean, it's not only just raunchy, but it's also quite violent. You know, I mean,
yes,
you look
violent,
at a lot of horror writing out there, and this is supposed to be historical romance, really, but actually is very, very gruesome in places.
Very gruesome. I mean, somebody gets a nail through their hand.
Hand, and there's
through the nails.
Lots of very unpleasant, unpleasant things happening to different people.
Yes, the hero, the villain, hammers this nail through the hero's hand onto a table.
Ow.
And he says, "I'll teach you about biting your nails."
It but it's a great genre, really great genre show.
It is, yeah. It is, yeah. And I said, Diana Gabaldon, I got this lovely picture of myself, and I put it on Facebook saying, Diana between her two little Jamies.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Although Sam's very tall, very tall.
Well, thank you, Fraser. Yeah. As I say, very, very interested in Outlander. I think we're going to have a little piece of music now, something that you might actually recognise.
All right, right.
I think I'll even ask you to tell the audience what it is.
What is it?
Have a look here at my list. What's
Your list is...
Can you read that?
Who's... Oh, no! No, you can't play this. No, actually, Who's Doctor Who? By Fraser Hines. Major Minor, 367. Still for sale.
He has a time machine to travel through the ages.
And that was Who's Doctor Who by Fraser Hines. Now, joining us on the telephone is Robin Pearce. Hello, Robin, are you there?
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine, Robin, how are you?
Yeah, great, thank you.
Oh, it's great to have you on the show.
It's a pleasure to be here.
What did you think of Fraser's song?
Oh, dear.
Put you on the spot
that
now.
That was awesome. I'll have to admit, I remember William Hartnell as my first Doctor Who, and I was deeply upset when he left. I have never heard that song before.
Really?
Never heard it before.
Lots of other people hadn't heard it either. It was the only flop that Les Reed and Barry Mason, they'd just written Delilah for Tom Jones and The Last Waltz for Engelbert, both $1 million hits, and I thought I was going to be a $1 million salesman as well and sell all these records, and it was the only flop they ever had. And I saw Les Reed recently, and he said, I reminded him, he said, yes, Fraser, you owe me $1 million.
Now, Fraser, sorry, I'm saying Fraser, and I should be saying
Robin,
you
Robin's
see.
Saying that.
You see, Mr. Hines sat next to me. He is a complete disruptive influence.
Mustn't take
So, Robin, you've done a review for us as well, and you're going to be appearing regularly on the show. Would you like to give a couple of sentences about yourself before you tell us which book you've read and tell us what you thought of it?
Certainly. My name, as you've already mentioned, is Robin Pearce. I hail from North Wales. I do freelance writing. I write for Starburst magazine. Currently, I believe, the longest-running magazine of sci-fi, horror, comics, and all the good stuff since 1978, and I've been with them now for 4 years. I do film reviews, book reviews, retrospectives. Basically, I'm a lifelong collector of all this kind of thing.
That's brilliant.
So for close to half a century now, I've been collecting.
And for our show, once a month, we're going to rope you in to tell us what you think of the latest book you've read.
Great.
So today, which one is that?
It's called White Knuckle by horror author, screenwriter and director Eric Red. Now, I've been a fan of Eric Red's for quite some time. He's one of those authors that you're probably aware of his work, but just don't know that you've been seeing something by Eric Red. Mm. For example, do you remember the mid-1980s, the film The Hitcher with Rutger Hauer?
Oh, I do indeed.
Red wrote it.
Wow.
Also, Near Dark, about a traveling...
Oh, that's one of my favourite vampire...
Really?
Yeah, one of my favourite
vampire
movies.
Another one of Eric Red's.
Goodness me. I'm ashamed to say I didn't know who the writer was. That's awful.
Well, he he's not only a writer, but he's a director as well, and he has another film that's currently on DVD called 100 Feet. And this is really where my interest in Mr. Red came in, because I had to do an interview with him for a magazine that's no longer in publication, and it was to promote 100 Feet. And this, to me, was just genius, because I'm also a fan of people like Robert Bloch and Richard Matheson, who really brought horror from, you know, Transylvanian castles and people, you know, putting bits of dead bodies together to make a monster, which you would never, ever come up against, into, like, suburbia. 100 Feet has a lady who, in self-defense, has killed her husband. She serves a year in prison and then has one of these tags on her leg, and she's put back home in her own house and can't move more than 100 feet from the base unit. Trouble is, her husband is haunting the house and wants to kill her.
Gosh, sounds
so
great.
I recommend that. Mm. But White Knuckle is probably the best book I've read this year so far.
Wow, that's quite a statement, Robin.
Well,
why is it so good?
It hits you right where you live. I have to drive to my day job every day along a dual carriageway. And what happens in White Knuckle is, it's the story is simplicity itself. You have a serial killer who's up and down the byways, highways, back roads and interstates of America. He's a long-distance truck driver. Now, he's been operating for 30 years as America's most prolific serial killer. And what he does is, if somebody has broken down or if he can force you off the road and you're female, then he will certainly do so. If he thinks he can get away with it, he will kidnap you. He'll put you in a compartment between the wheels of his truck, which will slowly drive you insane. And basically, the quicker he kills you, the better off you're going to be. You do not even want to know, Sam, what he's going to do with you when you're dead.
No, right, okay. We're getting the picture of how dark this book is.
It's very, very dark, but its darkness primarily is because it's entirely plausible. Because he'll pick up a victim in one state, toy with her across several states, and eventually get rid of the body in a completely different state, having knocked the teeth out with a claw hammer.
Wow, nice guy.
Make identification even more difficult. And of course, until the FBI start putting things together, there's no hope of this guy ever being caught. It's a mixture of a serial killer sort of vibe and the classic Richard Matheson book, Duel.
Mm, interesting.
Yeah,
It's really a page-turner. It comes out on June the 2nd, and it'll also be available, I believe, as an Amazon Kindle book.
Oh, great. And if you were going to rate it, Robin, what sort of rating would you give this book?
9 out of 10 without a hesitation.
Wow, that's fantastic. Mm. Well, there's it's one that we're going to go and buy, I think. White Knuckle.
Yeah, White Knuckle. That's the killer's CB handle.
So, thank you so much, Robin.
You are welcome.
We're going to let you go, but only if you promise to come back again next month with another book.
I most certainly will, and it's already selected.
Oh, good. Should we ask what that is?
Well, I've got my hands here on a book that's only just been published by a guy called Chris Taylor called How Star Wars Conquered the Universe.
Sounds wonderful. Yeah. Well, we should look forward to hearing that next month. Thank you so much, Robin. We'll speak to you soon.
Good luck with the rest of the show.
Thank you.
Bye.
Say bye.
You're listening to The Stone Tapes on Siren 107.3 FM with Sam Stone and friends.
Thank you.
And that was Lindsay Gold with Killing Kiss, and that was a radio debut.
Yeah,
that
really.
That was brilliant. Good. I loved
sounds,
it.
Sounds great through earphones, doesn't
it? A little bit of nepotism there.
Yeah.
I'm allowed. Anyway, we have with us now our LA correspondent. Now, doesn't that sound very posh? Joshua Lou Friedman on the phone. And we're going to go and invite Josh into our discussions now. Hi, Josh.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm amazing. That was very strange. They had me on hold listening to the show. And on the other end, I was listening to a Lindsay Gold song named Silver. And then I had two different earbuds. I was hearing Lindsay and two different songs in stereo, which is a bit confusing. But yes, that song is amazing as Silver is.
Do you like it? That's the first time you've heard it, I suppose, isn't it? As it is a radio debut.
I was listening to Silver, and then they go, and here you are on hold, and I was listening to Killing Kiss. Great work. Nice stuff.
Oh, brilliant. I'm sure she'll be really great to hear that. So what's happening in L.A. today, Joshua?
Are we talking about in Hollywood in general or just me? I'm busy.
About you. Tell us about you. What's happening in your world?
Oh, Jesus Christ. I'm in the middle of juggling five projects at the current moment. I'm prepping a film right now, which I'm scheduling between now and the end. I have a deadline by tonight at midnight, and I turn in all the schedules to the producers, and I hope they're very happy with that. On top of that, I'm booking my next three projects. One of them I start shooting next week. I'm doing a few days on the new Mike Mendez film.
Mike Mendez, brilliant.
And
what's that called? Can you tell us at this point?
I'm not allowed to talk about the film, except that it's not horror. It's an action film.
Oh, interesting.
And they're starting shooting next week, and I'm only kind of coming in for the first few days to kind of kick it off. I wasn't quite available to do the entire film. But Mike is very comfortable with me as his first AD, of course, as we've done many projects together, which we can talk about. I said I would come in and get the film going for him. And there's the other AD, the film company, told him he had to work with, comes in and kind of takes over after I kick it off.
Right, Joshua, just to stop everybody feeling very confused about what you actually do, do tell us a little bit about what your job is, because I know you've got two interesting jobs.
Oh, I see where this is going. I am an assistant director in many films and television shows and commercials and music videos here in Hollywood. I work in the low-budget circles, independent film, although I have dabbled in, major, high-profile projects like, Dark Knight, Transformers, go figure. But I tend to be an assistant director in all low-budget horror because that's my wheelhouse. That's my bread and butter. That's my love. I was raised on B-movies, and now here I am actually I'm a first AD on many of great independent horror films here in L.A.
And what's your other sideline?
I would like to help you with.
Yes. And on weekends, I tend to moonshine as a bartender at the Playboy Mansion. I've been there for 13 years. I do all the parties, and I'm Mr. Hefner's personal bartender on weekends.
Very cool. So you know all the Hollywood gossip then, because it all goes on in the Playboy Mansion, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure, yeah.
It does, actually. Recently, I just found out through there's a buddy of mine shoots a series out here starring Nathan Fillion called Castle. And I was there just 3 nights ago, and he came in just ecstatic that they've been picked up for 2 more seasons. And I think I'm allowed to say that. Yes, they're picked up for two more seasons.
That's
on
great.
Castle.
Well, great news.
Yeah. And those are the kind of little things you hear when you're rubbing shoulders of those people. But again, that's a side job. It's all, it's a side job. My day career is working on independent film.
And what's your favorite genre movies, Joshua? Because I know you have a lot of them. But what's your have you got any personal favorites?
Well, I'm an equal opportunity movie whore. But that being said, I tend towards science fiction and horror and fantasy, although I love all films, from all walks, from everywhere from the globe. But I do gravitate toward the horror and science fiction and fantasy worlds because that's what I was raised on and that's my bread and butter. I love it.
I think that's why you make a great AD for these things. So immediately, what are you working on next, other than the Mike Mendez?
Well, Mike Mendez, again, I'm only kicking off his show next week. I'm doing a film, it's actually a drama I'm doing in June called Limelight. I'm allowed to talk about it to a degree. It's just called Limelight, and can't talk about the actors yet, but it's one of those dramas of someone with bright eyes and big dreams coming to Hollywood, and they get a big break, and then, of course, the Hollywood industry cuts them down, and they have to rise above their own ego to make good films. And it's a standard drama, but you can't pick and choose. Even though science fiction and horror is my wheelhouse, every now and then I have to do a movie about puppies. Or a drama, or something where it's like, I am a hired gun. I do a lot each year, and of a lot of the films I work on, maybe 2 or 3 films out of each year I'm actually proud of. The rest are kind of paychecks. But every now and then you work on something wonderful, like anything I do for Mike Mendez, or Neil Marshall, of course, him and his wife Axel have this film, a horror anthology film coming out this year called Tales of Halloween. And we're very excited about that. And it's an anthology, again, some of the best independent directors in Hollywood have turned in their short stories. There's 11 of them. And they were nice enough to invite me to do half of them. They wanted me to do more, but my schedule, I was unavailable for some of it because I also...
That's a shame.
Them, and they... Yeah,
but we're going to ask you now. Sorry to interrupt you, but we're going to ask you to join us and stay online and talk to us about the film of the month that David Howe is going to lead shortly. And just to get us into the mood for that, here's a little snippet.
Okay.
Tell us about Twins of Evil.
And of course, I love that music. You cannot hear that music without it stirring the blood and seeing Peter Cushing and all of his people riding along in horses chasing down women in a Forest of Dean or wherever, wherever it was. So
I agree.
Oh, it's a tremendous one. This is Twins of Evil that we're talking about here. So, Josh, Twins of Evil, Hammer, I mean, growing up in America, presumably you have a great affection for these.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very much so. In fact, I was celebrating the Synapse Films release of the film on Blu-ray, because the music you just played is available as an isolated track. The gentleman's name is Harry Robinson, who scored that film, and you can listen to the isolated track on the Blu-ray. And I did while I was working. It was very nice.
Wow, that's amazing. That's amazing. So, Patricia, what do you feel about Twins of Evil?
Well, I'd never seen a Hammer horror film before. I wasn't quite sure what I was getting into, actually, when I said, yes, I'm going to go do this. It was awesome. I'm going to go home and watch all of the Hammer horror films now.
They
and then never sleep, I guess.
That movie was your first Hammer horror film?
My absolute first.
It's what a one to start on. What a one to start on.
It is a good one.
It's
it
a tremendous film. And Fraser,
I recognise a lot of the sets as well. some of those trees that are always in Dracula films. and little rivers and streams, yes. Obviously. But no, I loved the film as well. Yeah. Really good.
I think you knew some of the cast, didn't you, Fraser? You worked with them.
It wasn't the Collinson twins, but I kept pointing out sort of ex-girlfriends. I think.
Yes.
both of them Playboy playmates, I might add.
What?
So they were both Playboy playmates. They were chosen because they were Playboy playmates on a twinish.
The Collinsons.
Oh, really?
The Collinson twins, it's true.
And their
dialogue had to be dubbed because they're from Malta, and they both had very strong accents. So all their dialogue is actually dubbed by fine British actors.
Wow.
Oh, right. I didn't know that.
Wow, yeah. I didn't know that either. You're a mine of information, Josh. That's incredible. I mean, one of the things that I particularly like about the film is its brutality for the time. I think it was 70... Yeah. Was it 71? 1971?
1971. They did it after the Lust of the Vampire, yeah.
That's right. But the brutality of it, with particularly Cushing and his torment as he goes through the film, tracking down and actually burning these innocent girls at the stake, and then kind of agonising about it afterwards.
Was this pre Witchfinder General as well?
Oh, I think it was, yes.
So this
Well, Hammer was melding styles at the time, and Vincent Price's Witchfinder General was hot at the time. And what they did was they kind of plugged those two genres together to make this film, but it worked.
It does.
It absolutely did. And I think Cushing is amazing in it. I mean, if it's your first Hammer film, Patricia.
Absolutely. I mean,
have you seen Peter Cushing in anything before? Because has he just done Hammer movies?
He's done
tons
lots of things,
hasn't he? Yeah.
Not really. But his performance, it just makes Twins of Evil. That character could be so two-dimensional. It could be just a straight villain, and it's not.
He's mesmerizing,
it's
isn't
it? Absolutely a joy to watch.
But he plays a lot of goodies in later Hammer horror films as well.
Ooh.
Well, yeah, he's not just bad.
He's a very, very flexible actor. Yeah. I mean, Cushing's one of our great British actors. He's done so much. And I think Twins of Evil is one of the very, very best that he did, I think, way back then.
It was Carol Keyes. That was my old girlfriend.
Carol
Keyes. I think she was known as Luann Peters, then became Carol Keyes, or vice versa.
Oh,
she was the blonde girl. That,
I think
she got burnt as well.
Yeah,
Carol Keyes.
Am I crazy that Luann Peters also starred in something called The Macrochera? I don't know if you guys have heard of that.
The Macrochera.
Yes, she did.
Yes.
That's when I first met her, in The Macrochera. That's where the hinds swooped her away to the play. like Dracula, I swooped with my yes. And I think I took her to the Playboy Club, because the Playboy Club was in Park Lane at the time. There was a Playboy Club with bunnies and everything. Yeah.
Wow.
Anyway, I'm getting nostalgia here. Back to the show.
Well, it's funny because as I was reviewing the film, I noticed the character of Joaquin, which is the assistant to Count Kornstein, was played by a gentleman named Roy Stewart, I believe played Toberman in something called Tomb of the Cybermen.
That's right.
Has anyone here heard of that?
That was Roy Stewart, Toberman. That's right.
Yeah, you played the big black mute guy.
That's right, in Tomb of the Cybermen.
And in Twins of Evil.
That's right. That's the other person we spotted. Yeah.
He was in that. Yeah, of course.
Which was that? But that was being before Doctor Who, then.
No, it was after Doctor Who, because Doctor Who would have been 60s.
It was after.
After Doctor Who. Yeah, but no, I love Twins of Evil, and I'm so glad that Patricia, you got on board and you really loved it too. It's fantastic.
There's a very good Hammer horror film as well in black and white called X the Unknown. That Josh has also seen. That's one of his favourites.
I used to consider myself a Hammer horror expert, and then when I first met Fraser mentioned, "Well, have you seen the first film of Hammer horror I was in?" And I said, "No," and it was X the Unknown.
Was X the Unknown, and Fraser was in it
with that great American actor. Dean Jagger.
You could tell us a little funny story about that one, I think, about being in XCMO.
Yeah, Dean Jagger was a lovely, lovely man. I mean, we did a scene. It was 3 o'clock in the morning, and I had to say to my pal, we thought this old man was turning into a vampire. I had to say on the take, "I'll wait for you for 4 minutes, Willie." And on the first take, I said, "I'll wait for you for 4 minutes." And then this owl hooted. I went, "Make that 3 minutes." And, of course, the director, Leslie Norman, fell about it. Said, cut, we can't use that. But keep it in, Fraser, keep it in. I was ad-libbing at 11 years old, 10 years old. He said, keep that in. But next time, obviously, the owl won't hoot on cue. We'll dub something in. So on the film, you'll hear me say, "I'll wait for 4 minutes," and then you hear this flapping of an owl or something. It's not as good as an owl hooting. So that's Hines, young Hines, ad-libbing at 10 years old.
Yeah, I'm doing the very first Hammer.
So what was you haven't spoken much, Sam. What was your thoughts about Twins of Evil?
Well, I think it's one of my favourites, actually. I do really love it. I think it has all of those elements about vampire fiction that I used to love so much when I was growing up, sort of that sense of danger, the darkness of it, the mesmerism, the sexuality of the whole thing. So, I mean, for me, and like Fraser, actually, well observed. And for you, Patricia, whenever you get to watch some more Hammer movies, you'll see the same forest is used a lot, and the same room is always redressed.
Especially if you watch Vampire Circus.
Vampire Circus is another great one.
Mm, yes,
and that also has a Doctor Who connection.
Because
we've got Lala Ward
in
there.
Oh, because of the Lala Ward.
Yeah.
So there you go, Twins of Evil. That's our film of the month on the Stone Tapes.
And next month we will be looking at In Time. So we're going to go a little bit more modern. So we're going for a more science fiction with Justin Timberlake. And I forget what the young lady is that's in it, but she was very, very good. So we're going to have a chat about that next month.
In Time, yes.
In Time. So give yourself a chance to watch it and see if you agree with our panel's opinions on the film next month.
Please do.
Growing up, I was plain to see. to stay walks in the countryside where we hide. Tease me more. Is your house haunted as you swore? Is this to scare? Or do spirits linger there? I fantasize at midnight's bite. A highwayman in dreams you fight. Strife, you love me, though I'm not much, I'm your heroine.
And that was Lindsay Gold and Tilney. And before we all go, Joshua, you're still with us, I hope?
I still am.
Great. Now, would you like to give us a score for Twins of Evil? Marks out of 10. I'm going to ask all of...
it's actually a solid 8. And I'm very familiar with the Karnstein films. That was like part three of a trilogy, even though the part three was a prequel. And they set up the Karnstein family very nicely. If you watch scenes with the Count talking about the paintings. And, you know, it really sets up a trilogy if you go back and watch The Vampire Lovers and then Lust for a Vampire. It really holds up as the, in my opinion, up there with The Vampire Lovers, which kicked it off.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Fraser, what do you think of it? Marks out of 10.
Marks out of 10, I would give it... I'm tossing between a 7 and 8. I'd probably give it a 7. I'll give it a 7.
Okay. Yep. Patricia?
I was also going to be saying a 7. Now I sound like I'm copying somebody. 7.
David?
Oh, I think for me it's got to be kind of like 8.5, 9. I absolutely adore the film. I think it's got, as you said before, everything in it that you could possibly want, you know, from a Hammer film, from a horror film, from a vampire film. I mean, there isn't a duff performance in it. It's well acted. The script makes sense. It's coherent. It's beautifully directed. Yeah. It's got tremendous musical score. And as Josh said, is as part of the kind of the Karnstein trilogy that Hammer did. It's almost unfaultable. But no, I absolutely love it. So yeah, I give it 8.5, 9. Yeah,
fantastic. And
nice work.
That's all I think we have time for today.
What are you giving it?
I'm going to give it a 9 actually, because of all the reasons I said earlier. Yeah, I'm going to give it a 9 because I do love it. And I just want to say a huge thanks to our special guest, Fraser Hines.
Thank you, bye. Good night.
Patricia Ash and Robin Pierce, our fantastic reviewers. Joshua Lou Friedman, our LA correspondent. And David Howe, co-producer. And of course, our fantastic producer, Alex Lefchick.
Lefchick.
Did I still say it wrong?
There's a Lefchick in the post. There's a Lefchick in the post.
He's going to have to write it for me phonetically.
Yes. Good job. This is just a rehearsal.
Thanks so much for listening in, and we'll see you again this time next month.